Hello, good Wednesday, and welcome to the X's and O's with Greg Cosell. The guy over there, of course, is Greg Cosell of NFL Films and ESPN's NFL Matchup. Greg, we're both frantically watching as much college tape as we possibly can to get to our draft shows, which will start next week. Last week we did a show after day one of free agency, and of course a lot happened after that, so I want to do kind of a free agency wrap-up today. A few trades, a lot of things happened that could be very interesting in the 2024 NFL season. So before we get to the draft, which will be our primary focus for the next however many months, of course, I wanted to get into these other deals and kind of what they mean and what your thoughts are. Let's start with Brian Burns to the Panthers. New Giants defensive coordinator Shane Bowen won't likely blitz nearly as much as Wink Martindale did. It's not his history. Let's assume he doesn't. So the Giants trade for former Panthers edge rusher Brian Burns, and they give him a massive new contract, 5 years, $141 million with $87.5 million guaranteed. They already have Kayvon Thibodeau, who's, you know, we'll talk about him. Dexter Lawrence, I think we both agree, is a nose. He's kind of one of one. They already have those guys. They bring in Burns. What does that look like? And more specifically, how are Burns and Thibodeau different in their athletic profiles? Like, what different things do they bring as edge guys?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, so I'll get through it as quickly as I can. Let's start with Burns and how he'd probably be deployed. And we have a sense because Shane Bowen has been in the league as a D coordinator. He was with Tennessee, so we kind of know what he likes to do. So Burns will become, you know, Harold Landry, so to speak, in the context of the Giants offense. Now, he's better than Landry. Landry's a good player, but, you know, Burns is better. He's long, he's rangy, he's athletic, he can bend, he can flatten his rush path, which is something, by the way, Kayvon Thibodeau can't do. So there's a difference there in just the traits that the two players bring to the table. Thibodeau is a solid player. I think he'll be a good pro. He's more of a power player. He's not a true bender. Thibodeau last year, the large majority of his sacks were secondary sacks, not where he won early in the down. Burns can win early in the down, but they've got a very interesting group up front now. You mentioned Dexter Lawrence. They still have Ojulari, who's also a good player. You'll see a lot of movement, a lot of movable chess pieces up front, because that's something Bowen did with Tennessee. There were times he had Landry lining up sort of inside as a stand-up joker. You know, you could see that with Thibodeau. You could see that with Burns. You could see that with Ojulari. There's a lot of movable pieces here. So I think you will absolutely see that with Shane Bowen now being the D coordinator with the Giants.
Yeah, it's interesting because Burns also, I mean, he's got speed. He's also got speed to power. That's one thing. When I rewatched his tape last week, he'll bring that speed and just get his hands in a tackles on his numbers and just push him back. And it's not so much, oh, I can use my force. It's I come off the snap so fast, and that gives me velocity, and the velocity gives me that power. He's really good at that.
Well, and the key thing there is, because what are offensive tackles so concerned about? They're so concerned about giving up the edge. And since Burns can attack and challenge the edge so quickly, all it takes for speed to power, because he's certainly not powerful in a strict sense. Like if you just talk about body power, you know, he's not that guy. But because he's going to get offensive tackles in a position where, one, they're going to overset, or two, they're going to be a little off balance because they're so concerned about not giving up the edge, the arc, the top of the arc, is he catches them then when they're not really ready to handle the power element. So that's where the speed to power becomes such a factor.
And if you overset or set to the arc, Burns can also give you that quick arm over.
Come underneath you.
Yeah. With the inside counter, and then you're just done. So, yeah.
Correct. So, no. That'll so Burns is a really – I remember he was one of my favorites when he came out of Florida State. He's Gumby-like just in the way his body can move.
He's got that motorcycle lean, as you like to say.
That he can do. That he absolutely can do.
The underneath and all that. It's so that'll be an interesting front to watch. The Bears' time with Justin Fields has ended, Greg, as he was traded to the Steelers for a 2025 sixth-round pick that could become a 2025 fourth-round pick if Fields plays at least 51% of the Steelers' offensive snaps in 2024. Based on what you saw – let's separate this from Russell Wilson for a minute. Based on what you saw of Fields last season, I want you to put on your QB evaluation hat.
Yeah.
What does he do well, and what's, at this point in his career, missing? Like, to get to the ultimate Justin Fields, and we don't want to, you know, we say, how does he become a great quarterback? Well, there are 16 different types of quarterbacks. We know this. To be the best Justin Fields, where is he already there with that, and where does he still need development?
Which, again, there's a lot there as well, and it's kind of an enigma wrapped in a riddle, as it were, with Justin Fields, because you hear so many coaches now, you have conversations with him, I have conversations with him, talk about, you know, playing above the X's and O's, playing off script. We know Fields can do that at a high level. We also know that the designed run game he can do at a high level. So there's two things there that seem to be increasing in importance in the league, which he does really well. Now, what he doesn't do well, and maybe in the mind, not maybe, I think the league told you, what he doesn't do well is see the field playing from the pocket. You know, it has to be really well defined, and you can do that, but you can't do that all the time. So clearly the league felt that he's so poor in that area that he just, I guess he's irredeemable as far as the league is concerned, which I find interesting. There's no question he doesn't see the field well. That, the tape tells you that. That's not
just to break in, when we say the league says this, what we're saying is the compensation the Bears got for Fields is telling you no one's seeing him as a starter right now.
No one saw him as a starting quarterback. Yeah. And, you know, look, I think, as we're saying, there are issues when you watch his tape. And these are not interpretations, not opinions. This is what the tape shows. But I guess I found it difficult to believe that he'd be seen as irredeemable. And that surprised me a little bit. I mean, clearly, you know, can you line up with Justin Fields and play? I think you can. Now, obviously, the league said that you can as a starting quarterback. And it was interesting that the Steelers immediately said that he's our backup. Now, you know how seasons play out. We'll see how all that goes. We don't know the answer to that. It's March 20th. We don't know the answer to that when it's October 10th. You know, yeah. We'll see how it all plays out. But yes, there's definite concerns with Fields that the tape clearly shows. I just was surprised at the fact that no one saw him as a starting quarterback, even understanding that there are issues that obviously need to be continued to work on and cleaned up.
Let me ask you this, because you're very familiar with the Eagles, obviously. My first thought when he signed, the trade was to the Steelers and the Eagles signed Kenny Pickett after all this happened. And we discussed last week the Saquon Barkley deal and how the Eagles might be changing their offense. My first, like right off the bat, thought was I thought he'd be a better fit with the Eagles as a backup than with the Steelers.
You're talking to Fields with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the Eagles didn't feel that way and you know how it works. When you trade for quarterback like that, as they did with Pickett, that means somebody in the organization, whether it was Howie Roseman, whether it was one of the higher level personnel people, obviously liked Pickett coming out. And then they felt, hey, we can get Kenny Pickett and we can turn him into what he was in his last year at Pitt, which I thought was a legitimate NFL starting quarterback prospect. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously in 2 years in Pittsburgh, people will say, boy, this guy stinks. You know how that goes. He was a very uncomfortable player in Pittsburgh for any number of reasons. We're not there. But he did not look anything like he did his last year at Pitt when, look, no one's suggesting, including myself, that he would have been a top five quarterback in the league. But I think that he had enough to his game with the way in which he played, with sort of intelligence, accuracy, and the way he played to be a quality starter. He lost a lot of those things. You didn't see that in Pittsburgh, with very few exceptions, which tells me he was just totally uncomfortable and had kind of lost his feel for how to play, you know, given maybe what he was asked to do. Who knows the reason?
Right. Well,
but,
yeah.
You know, I still think that Kenny Pickett in the right situation could be a starting quarterback, but obviously that's not going to be the case in Philly unless, of course, Jalen Hurts were to get hurt.
Which, you know, we'll get to that in a second. Jalen Hurts has missed some time. He's a physical quarterback. That could happen.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to be the 5 millionth person to, you know, dump on Matt Canada. But to me, there was a lack of cohesiveness in that passing game. It just never seemed to come together in ways that a young quarterback especially. And Pickett, to me, was kind of my – the thing with him, as I would say, is his floor is Kirk Cousins and his ceiling is Kirk Cousins. He's that kind of. He's not going to wow you in the arm. He's not going to make, you know, incredible off-script athletic plays, but he can play within a structure. And the Steelers' structure in those 2 years, I thought, was missing a lot of defining characteristics and little things that tie it together.
I would agree with that, and that's one reason, obviously, Matt Canada was released. And then in the middle of a season, it's really difficult, and then he got hurt. I mean, the first – I'm trying to remember how many games he played without Canada. Two at most.
It was a couple.
But yeah, it was a couple. But there were moments there in those couple of games where you thought, okay, now this kind of looks like a passing game where he's a little more comfortable. But – he was still missing a lot of routine throws, and he didn't really do that in college. So, again, it's the NFL. It's a different game. But, you know, just he was not a comfortable player at all. And you don't know the reasons why. Well, as we said, in Philly, he was obviously brought in to be the backup, but you never know.
Jalen Hurts hasn't missed a lot of time, but he's missed some time. You know, they've had, and sometimes it was, hey, we've got the thing wrapped up. We can just play our backups. But in a Kellen Moore offense – you know, let's bring in Kenny Pickett and say, okay, he will play at his best in a Kellen Moore offense. What does Kenny Pickett's best look like for the Eagles and that strength?
I mean, think of it this way. Kellen Moore was in Dallas for a number of years. And again, I'm not making an apples-to-apples comparison in terms of the exact traits of each quarterback. But, I mean, my sense is that Kenny Pickett could execute a Kellen Moore offense in a similar fashion as Dak Prescott did. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, Dak Prescott, for the most part in his career, particularly in the more recent vintage of Prescott, you know, his last couple of years with Kellen Moore, certainly this year, is for the most part a pocket player. I mean, this year he showed a little more athletic second reaction movement, but he's mostly evolved into a pocket quarterback. I don't think you would describe Prescott at this point as a dual threat quarterback. You know, he has movement where every once in a while he can do that. And as I said, he did it a little more this year than in previous years. But for the most part, he's a pocket player. And, you know,
he has functional ability. I don't think at any time in his career going back to college, you'd never mistake him for Michael Vick or Cam Newton.
No question. So the point is, you know, he was essentially an executor of an offense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that Kenny Pickett could execute the Kellen Moore offense if he had to. You know, I don't think that that would be something that he couldn't do or that he would have a problem with.
No. A couple of receiver deals I want to get into. You do Titans Radio every week, so I'm sure you've already talked about this. Calvin Ridley had interest from the Jaguars coming back, maybe the Patriots. Titans swoop in at the 11th hour with a 4-year, $92 million deal with $50 million guaranteed. I don't think there's any question that Calvin Ridley is an ex-ISO receiver. I when I watch his tape, I think, yeah, he's that guy.
Right.
And the Titans did not have that. Obviously, they desperately wanted it because they gave Ridley a whole bunch of money. And you know this well because you study the Titans. With their other targets for Will Levis, how does Ridley fit in? Is he – in your mind, the capper on the thing where, yeah, now we have a guy who can legitimately beat just about anyone, just about any time?
Well, first of all, I was glad to see he got Doug Farrar money. I was happy about that.
Well, you know, that's a rare thing.
Yeah. You know, I think with their new offensive coordinator who came from the Jaguars, I think the Titans actually – the three receivers they would start, if all works out the way they want it to be, would be Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, and Treylon Burks, if it all works out the way they want it to work out.
Right.
And I think you have three receivers that could line up anywhere in the formation. Now, mm-hmm. Ridley, of those three, at this point, is the best boundary X. Hopkins has certainly done that throughout his career, and he can still do it. But right. The thing about Ridley, which I think really helps, besides the fact that he's a really good receiver and a dynamic route runner who understands how to get corners off their spot, how to get corners turned, how to snap off his breaks at the top of his route stem, create separation. He's just a really good receiver.
Very practiced. He's not just a speed guy. He's got it all down.
No, but the point is he does have vertical ability, which they don't really have, and that helps to regulate the defense, and that's a piece they've sorely been lacking. They even have a tight end in Chigakwanko who actually can run as well. The issue for the Titans is their O-line, and that needs to be clearly addressed and upgraded. Now they have one of the best O-line coaches in the league. Brian Callahan was fortunate enough to bring his dad in, Bill Callahan, who is one of the best there is, maybe one of the best ever.
If you're
going to
make assistants Hall of Famers, he's one of them.
Yeah, and you know, but obviously they still need people. Now he may be able to get more out of certain guys. Like I still think Nicholas Petit-Frere can be a quality right tackle just in terms of his traits, and maybe Callahan can turn him into a quality right tackle. Obviously they need a left tackle. You know, I'm sure they're going to draft one. You know, that depends on who they like. You know, they do have weapons now, and obviously they've chosen to go in a totally different direction offensively, which we all knew they would. So they have two backs who are explosive and can line up anywhere in the formation in Tony Pollard and Taji Spears. So this offense will look totally, totally different, but they need to protect, and they couldn't protect it all a year ago.
At all. Yeah, I'm team Taji Spears all the way. Hollywood Brown of the Chiefs, this certainly sets the Cardinals up to take a receiver high in the draft because now they have a big mystery back at the position. The Chiefs had a serious need for that X type who can catch the ball after he's disrupted coverage, and there are quite a few of those guys in this draft. But what does Brown do for the Chiefs on that one-year, $7 million deal last year? And part of it was the passing game. When I bring these numbers up, I'm not saying it's entirely on him. He got 51 passes on 94 targets for 574 yards and four touchdowns. If you have that catch rate and that sort of quote-unquote lack of explosiveness as the stats show, it's a little disconcerting. But when you watch his tape, you're like, boy, this guy can separate. And Andy Reid, and I would include Mahomes in this now because it's not like earlier. Mahomes runs the offense. I mean, Reid is, you know, designing it. But those guys have a knack for taking receivers who in other systems would be inconsistent and hard and mercurial and hard to trust and turning them into something more. So when you look at Hollywood Brown in this offense, I don't think it precludes them from taking a receiver in the draft or two, but what does he do?
And again, you're dealing with another guy that can run. So now you have a true deep threat. And we know how much motion that the Chiefs use, and he can be put in motion to get him free access off the ball and get him into his routes quickly and really showcase that vertical ability. So he gives them something they did not have. I mean, Valdes-Scantling can run, but he's never really been a consistent receiver.
It's hard to know when he's done running what's going to happen from there.
Yeah. I mean, Brown actually throughout his career has been a pretty good receiver. He's just that, you know, he's been with a number of teams now, so people don't think of him that way. And I'm not suggesting, you know, he's at the Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase category of receiver, you know, that level. But he's been a pretty good receiver in his career, and he does have vertical ability. And, you know, he's shown the ability to run good routes as well at times. So he's just going to add to the Chiefs because they need more receivers. And your point's correct. I don't think it precludes them from taking one. They may say because it's a good receiver draft and you can always get receivers, they may say, well, we don't need to take one in the first round. We can easily get one in the second or third. They may say that now, but certainly, you know, he adds to their offense significantly.
Although my last mock, I gave him A.D. Mitchell from Texas, and I just giggled when I did that.
I love A.D. Mitchell's tape. I think, again, without knowing the kid, without knowing all those other things that determine a lot about a player's transition to the league, I think A.D. Mitchell has high-level traits and could develop into a top-10 receiver in the league.
Well, a lot of times with receivers, when it doesn't quite work out, I mean, there are all kinds of reasons. I think sometimes there's kind of a mischaracterization of what kind of receiver he is. So when you look at Marquise Hollywood Brown, is he – I don't think he's an ex-ISO, like, true number one guy. Is he best as a Z? Is he best in the, you know, outside slot, inside slot? Because there's so much 3-by-1, those designations. Where would you put him the most in an offense?
I mean, theoretically, you could use him, and again, not solely. Yeah, that's what people have to understand. The way the NFL has evolved with offenses now is there's a lot of diversity with formations. Receivers line up in multiple locations within an offense. Right. So it's not in one spot.
So when we call Calvin really an ex-ISO, we're really talking more about his traits than where he would align himself.
Right. Like, think back to when Tyreek Hill was sort of emerging as Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before – what did the Chiefs do a lot of? They lined up in a lot of those 1x3 sets where Kelce was the boundary X.
Yes.
And where did they put Tyreek Hill? Number 3 to trips.
Right, it was the most, yes, indefensible formation.
Really difficult to defend. I could see Brown there. And as I said, yeah, I'm not saying that's all he's going to be, but you could certainly see him there. That puts tremendous pressure on a defense.
Greg, I don't know if the Atlanta Falcons are going to have a top five offense in 2024, but top five fun to watch. It's starting to look like that because they trade Desmond Ridder to the Cardinals. That's interesting, for Rondale Moore. And this was under the radar trade for the Falcons. They already have Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, two literal first round talents. They're all taken in the first round. They get Darnell Mooney from the Bears in free agency. Now they have Mooney, and I look at what Zach Robinson has done. You know, he was at the Rams, so they had all that backfield stuff with, you know, the sweeps and whatnot with Robert Woods, the end arounds or ends around. I don't know how that's pluralized, but anyway, well, when you add a guy like Rondale Moore, who he's not just a gadget guy, you can see him running deep and, you know, some really interesting routes. But boy, I tell you, with Cousins at the head of this thing, I can't. More than most offenses, Greg, in the NFL for this season, I can't wait to see how this looks. So, maybe first of all, what your thoughts on Rondale Moore, and my gosh, how does this all work together? Because it's really fascinating now.
Well, you have to understand, Zach Robinson's a young coach. He's been with the Rams. That's what he knows. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a lot of the Rams' offense. And you can think of Rondale Moore as Tutu Atwell in the context of that offense. Sure. Now he may be a little more than that, depending on how they see him. But, you know, Tutu Atwell got hurt a little bit last year, but when he played, he was a really interesting player for the Rams. So more, you could see him somewhat similar. They're different body types, different builds, but, you know, obviously they're both short. You know, now the question to me with that offense is Kyle Pitts, because Pitts, yeah, for whatever reason, in his first couple of years in the league, he's not become what I think we all thought he would become. Now, we don't know the reasons for that, but he certainly has high-level traits. But it raises a larger philosophical question of tight end deployment in the league. You know, how do you use tight ends? We're going to get into that discussion with Brock Bowers when we get to the draft.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who's obviously extremely gifted. But, you know, is Kyle Pitts a wide receiver? Is Kyle Pitts a tight end? It's easy to say, well, you'll move him all around the formation. But, you know, that's easy to say. You know, it's just like when people say about a defensive player, well, he can play five positions. Well, no, nobody really does that. So with Pitts, you know, how do they see him in the context of a Zach Robinson offense? You know, is he obviously more physically gifted than Tyler Higbee? Sure. You know, and Tyler Higbee was kind of an interesting player these last number of years for the Rams, but you'd think that with Kyle Pitts, you might want to get him more targets than Tyler Higbee. So, you know, to me, he's sort of the wild card in all this because he's got really dynamic ability, and it just hasn't seemed to come to fruition in the NFL up to this point.
And even, yeah, the Arthur Smith offense with the Falcons, it was just odd. I'm not bashing Smith. It just didn't, you know.
Well, they didn't really have a quarterback, I'm sure, that they were comfortable with.
Yeah, they were certainly hamstrung by that. But yeah, the Falcons this year, boy, that's a lot of guys to get balls to. That's going to be interesting.
It's a lot. And their O-line, while it's not among the top five, is certainly good enough where that's not an issue.
Their defense is interesting. I mean,
their defense last year, and I know Ryan Nielsen is now in Jacksonville, but yeah, Ryan Nielsen, I thought, did a great, great job. That defense was fun to watch last year.
Yeah, he was kind of a rising star with the Saints, and certainly last year brought that up.
Yeah.
Speaking of defense, Greg, the Texans, we talked last week about the addition of DeNico Autry. Toot, toot, as a big deal. I am the president of the fan club. Then they doubled down after Jonathan Greenard signed with the Vikings and gave former Vikings edge rusher Danielle Hunter a 2-year, $49 million deal with $48 million guaranteed, basically the Kirk Cousins special. Now, they did lose Sheldon Rankins to the Bengals. I think that's an underrated hit. So there's now a need on the inside, which you can handle in the draft. But now the Texans have two legitimate edge rushers, and Autry is the versatile disruptor. So as I asked you about Thibodeau and Burns, when you look at Will Anderson and Hunter – what are their sort of complementary and disparate skill sets.
Well, Anderson is just a physical player. That's his game more than bendy. I mean, it's not that he can't bend, but that's not his game. He's a power physical player, and he's really good at it. Hunter is long, athletic, more bendy. And I think, you know, the name you mentioned, Danico Autry, that sort of fell a little bit under the radar. But let's not assume that he hasn't lost anything, because he is getting up there in years. But let's assume he hasn't lost anything. He's a really good signing, because mm-hmm. you can line him up both at D end and at D tackle. He's yes. really good on the inside in the stunt game. I mean, with Jeffrey Simmons and Autry in Tennessee, when they were in their dime defense, the inside stunts that they did were, you know, both could be used as penetrators, pickers, and both could be used as loopers. And Autry's a really interesting player. So that was kind of under the radar, because obviously everybody's focused on Will Anderson and the fact that he had a really strong rookie season. And Danielle Hunter now, who's been a really – I mean, Danielle Hunter's close to 100 sacks in his career. And it also just goes to show that sometimes when you evaluate players coming out of college – and I mention this because I think Chop Robinson falls into this category, but Hunter had 4.5 sacks in his college career, and right. I think he's close to 90 in his NFL career. So, you know, sometimes you have to look at the player and his traits as opposed to just a line on a sheet, you know, that tells you what his numbers are. But Hunter's, you know, he's been a great pass rusher. I think last year, what, he had 15, 16 sacks? I mean, he's a disruptive player. And now,
plus you know, a ton of pressures, which sometimes are almost more important than sacks.
Right. So, I mean, now you have Anderson on one side, Hunter on the other side, Autry in the middle. I mean, they also signed, I know they signed a linebacker, Al Shaer from Tennessee, but Christian Harris, I thought, really came on last year.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a really good player, really good linebacker.
Yep. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I could see Hunter or Anderson stunning with Autry outside, and you know that big guy in the middle, just you can get that in the draft and kind of go from there. But this is another
game where D'Amico Ryans came from with the Niners. They always had that DND tackle, multi-positional guy, which yep. Autry is. They had a Menahu. They had guys like that could line up in both spots. So D'Amico Ryans is used to having that kind of player.
Yeah, Eric Armstead, who had a whole lot of money to go to Jacksonville.
Yep.
Let's see. Tyron Smith, the Jets. The Jets also added tackle Morgan Moses and guard John Simpson in free agency. And now here's Smith added to the roster with a one-year $6.5 million deal. Last season, he allowed 3 sacks and 21 total pressures and 610 pass-blocking reps. I studied him pretty closely because I don't think there's any – in my mind, he's a Hall of Famer eventually.
Right.
I didn't see a lot of – I mean, strength in the right. He's got that old man strength. Well, like, remember Mark Stepnoski, where I swear to God, if that guy's 80, he could still block someone. Certain guys just have that, and he has that. Maybe there was a little drop off in speed around the arc, maybe on the backside, but I, you know, certainly for what the Jets need, I think this is a great signing. I mean, based on what I saw from Smith last year, is he, you know, vintage Tyron Smith? No, but Tyron Smith now is still pretty darn good.
And the key is availability. He's been hurt a lot. But
yeah.
When he played, he was very good. He was still very, very good. I agree with you. I think maybe just every once in a while you'd see him get beat on the edge, but he's still a really good player, and they needed that big time. I mean, they also linked Mike Williams to go. Now, they have, assuming he can stay healthy. I mean, he's had some significant injuries in his NFL career, so you don't know. But to go with Garrett Wilson, that's pretty good.
Williams is a big guy who can get downfield. He's a contested catch monster when he's healthy. And yeah, I wrote, he gives Aaron Rodgers unless Aaron Rodgers becomes our next president, we don't know that. But if he's on the field, gives Aaron Rodgers a really intriguing option alongside Garrett Wilson, which, you know, as you said.
Yeah, no, they needed to upgrade that O-line big time. It'll be interesting, you know, how that all plays out. It's a different O-line than a year ago, and it should be much, much better. And obviously, they've got a really good back in Breece Hall. So this is another team. You know, you spoke about Tennessee and what they bring to the table in terms now all of a sudden with their skill position players. The Jets are kind of moving in that direction a little bit as well.
Which they needed to do. I wanted to bring up Chase Young to the Saints, Greg, because this is one of the – I mean, and Chase Young is a good player. And they used him with the Niners after that trade in some really interesting ways, like – Loaded over the center, mug looks with Nick Bosa at times.
Yeah, once in a while, not very often. But yeah,
not very often. But yeah. So the Commanders traded into the Niners last November. Young struggled at times to make a consistent. He had a career high 11 sacks and 74 total pressures. And you could see those dynamic play. He had a sack in the Super Bowl, but he also got edged out a lot. And where are you on Young's? I mean, his impact, yes. The consistency, because, and I always felt this about Jadeveon Clowney, where he would be like an absolute. There was one, he was the Seahawks, played the 49ers, one of the best games by an edge rusher I've literally ever seen. But Clowney would then, like, you know, disappear for a couple of games. Where do you think Chase Young is as a consistent edge rusher, team agnostic, whether he signed with anyone? Kind of where right. you are with his development.
I think it's been less than we probably all thought. Yeah. I watch the Niners every week because I do radio out there, and I didn't think overall he played particularly well for the Niners. As a pass rusher in particular, I didn't think that he was a really dominant force. And by dominant force, we're not speaking about getting 3 or 4 sacks every game. Yeah. We're just talking about the ability to create pressure off the edge. And I don't think he did that with a whole lot of consistency. I think one reason he was not scooped up right away is because the league's a little uncertain as to what he is as a true edge pass rusher. Because yeah. normally, if you think of a guy as a really good pass rusher, they get scooped up because that's a premium position in this league. It's sure. the reason Clowney was never scooped up. And Clowney right. had far and away his best year this year. And
as we speak now, he did have his best year. He's still on the open market. He hasn't signed
which
him
is yet. Really interesting. You know, I don't know why. Maybe, who knows, maybe people thought this was an aberration year for Clowney. I don't know the answer to that. But he right. clearly had his best year as a one-on-one pass rusher, which he really wasn't prior to this year. Young did not really show that with the Niners. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's a question as to what he is. You know, again, I don't know Chase Young. I don't know his work ethic. I don't know all those other things that often go into taking players that have really good talent to that next level.
Right.
So obviously the Saints know that he has talent and they feel they can bring it out of him. But if you just go by tape study, it was not a great year for Chase Young.
And he was a guy, again, had a career best year in all the metrics. And, you know, you can't just throw that away, but I saw him get blocked out a lot by tackles. I saw him get blocked out a lot by tight ends. I saw a guy who, for his physical profile and what he's able to do when he's on, I saw far too much of him getting erased by guys who should not be able to erase him. That to me would be really disconcerting.
And numbers are, you can't just look at that.
Right. You have to then go to the tape.
Yeah.
Lions defense. They had DJ Reader from the Bengals as a defensive tackle who could line up alongside Aleem McNeil, another Doug Farrar favorite. And they had Marcus Davenport, another inconsistent guy, on a one-year $6.5 million deal to reinforce the edge with John Kaminsky and Josh Pascal, James Houston. Davenport missed a lot of 2023. With the
they
Vikings.
Got that guy Hutchinson too, by the way.
Yeah, he's the rock star, obviously, but you know, he can disrupt. And the thing about Davenport, he can disrupt inside and outside. They can move him around. He can do that. So, how does that line shake out to you? With Hutchinson is the obvious alpha, but you bring in Reader, and you saw the Lions struggle sometimes with the run, and Reader's a penetrator as well. And then I want to bring in let's talk about the cornerbacks in a minute, but how do you like that line now with the addition of Reader, especially?
Well, they got a lot of bodies. I mean, and I think that they probably want to be in a position like we saw the Eagles, you know, a year ago when they were in the Super Bowl, where they have 8 or 9 guys that they can roll in and, you know, and play. And mm-hmm. and they became very multiple with their fronts as well. We saw last year Jack Campbell line up on the line of scrimmage on the ball. Sure. We saw Derek Barnes line up on the ball. So I think Aaron Glenn really likes that multiplicity with his front alignments. Mm-hmm. And now they have a lot of people that can line up in different spots. They had another guy, and I lost track of his name, who was a D tackle. And I'm trying to think. I thought he was a good player for them, but I don't know if he's still there. It wasn't Aleem McNeil. He's a good player.
No. Oh, Benito Jones signed with the Dolphins.
Yeah. There was one other guy.
You've mentioned Benito Jones before. I think.
Yeah, he actually, when he played, he was good for them. Now, he was a run stuffer kind of guy. Like, yeah. DJ Reader is, in a sense, going to be that guy for right. them. And he's a good player, Reader. Another kind of overlooked signing, because he can be sure. a dominant player inside in the run game.
Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting line. Linebackers, they got some guys. They got two experienced cornerbacks in Carlton Davis from Tampa Bay in a trade. They signed, I think that was a trade. Anyway, they signed former Raiders cornerback Amik Robertson. Neither one is what you call a number one guy right now, but how do they fit in with Aaron Glenn's defense? Because they have Cam Sutton and Emmanuel Mosley already. They're set at safety with Kirby Joseph and Melifonwu, but are they set at cornerback? Last season, they played more zone than man, slightly more single high than two high. Cover three was their primary coverage. Kind of where does it all sit in your mind?
Well, what I would say is this. I would say that Davis, you know, he may not be exactly what he was, but he can play man, and he's big and he's physical. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Glenn switched to playing a lot more zone last year simply because I think the man wasn't working out as well as they had hoped. Because yeah. I think Aaron Glenn, in an ideal world, likes to pressure and play man, but you have to understand your personnel, and they simply did not have the personnel on the back end to blitz and play a lot of man. Because if you're going to leave your corners essentially on an island, and keep in mind, even when you're playing single high, if you're playing cover one single high, they're still on an island when you're really dealing outside the numbers. And,
right.
and it just, they didn't have enough quality corners to do that, because down the stretch, they were playing, what, Sutton and Vildor, was it not? Wasn't it yeah. Vildor playing down the yeah. stretch? So yep. And Sutton's not really an outside corner in my view.
No, he's a decent slot guy.
Yeah. So they just didn't have the people. So they obviously felt they needed an upgrade. And, you know, well, now we'll see how Aaron Glenn chooses to play. You know, will he now play more man? Will he now go back to blitzing a little more? I think that remains to be seen.
I think Robertson is a better man cornerback, too. So I wouldn't be surprised if that is a switch.
Well, he can play both outside and in the slot.
Yeah. Our final transaction, Greg, up here in my neck of the woods, Seahawks trade for Sam Howell. Under new offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb, who put together the Washington Huskies offense, Howell will not compete with Geno Smith per se. But and just the structure of that offense at Washington, what Grubb, it was a lot of formation diversity, a lot of motion, downhill running, and the deep passing game. Michael Penix Jr., Greg, had 117 attempts of 20 or more air yards last season, which is insane.
Yeah, they had some
I don't
really
think
cool
any other quarterback had more than 80 in the NCAA.
Yeah, they had some really cool intermediate vertical route concepts. When you watch the Washington tape and you saw the throws that Penix was asked to make, and he made them, but their offense was pretty interesting. It was probably as NFL as any offense of the top quarterbacks in this draft, for sure.
Which it transitions well for Geno Smith, who throws a really pretty deep ball. So with Howell, I mean, he led the NFL in both interceptions and sacks last season. Not great, but I think we both liked him coming out of college. He had whatever. Where does he measure up in your mind? Is this in just like a situation and scheme agnostic offense based on what you saw with him last year with the Commanders? Where are you with him?
I thought he showed, particularly early in the season, some really positive traits where I thought he could be a starting quarterback. I think one of the things that for him is something he really needs to work on is he doesn't really have great pocket movement. Now, he can run a little bit when you need him to run, but he kind of gets stuck in the pocket sometimes, and he just doesn't move, and therefore he can't avoid the rush. And that really started to show up behind a bad O-line, by the way.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out in Seattle if he gets an opportunity to play. I would assume, this is the last year of Geno Smith's contract. I guess we have to wait and see how this year plays out. But, I think Howell is willing to stand. He's willing to throw the ball down the field. He needs to develop that balance between how long can I stand there, which, standing and delivering is a good trait, but at some point you have to decide, well, I can't stand there anymore. And he just didn't have that pocket movement ability, and that hurt him a lot as last year progressed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So when you say pocket movement with him, are you talking about leaving the pocket too early, or are you talking about moving within that sort of boxing ring?
Moving within the boxing. Yeah. Okay. He can run a little bit, but – and maybe he should have done a little more of that, particularly playing behind a relatively porous O-line. But, you know, he needs that ability to slide one way, step up, slide another way. You know, in other words, try to find a more quiet spot to deliver the football so you're not in the cauldron of the rush.
Yeah, Brady was the best at that I've ever seen. I think Joe Burrow, in my mind, is the best at it now, and it's a really undersold skill. It's a really
You don't have to be a great athlete to do that. That's a nuanced trait as opposed to an athletic trait.
No, we bring up Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady's not beating anyone's 40. It's not who he was.
Oh, I think he ran like a 5.6.
Yeah, which you know, I'm getting ready for that.
In the first 20 yards. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, those Texas receivers could run 3.40s in the time it would take me to run 20. So I'm probably off the team. Well, Greg, as always, great stuff from you on our team. We will be turning our attention to the draft next week. Very excited about that. So we wrap up free agency and onward to the collegiate selection process. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, Doug.